To a very vexed question within the military or even in public life, at what point and in what circumstances is it the morally correct decision to leave your post, to evade capture or death, leaving those reporting to you behind in the belief that your escape is the best way for you to serve your country? Is it an honourable decision? Well, I certainly grew up with this discussion whenever the subject of Lieutenant General Gordon Bennett arose. He commanded the 8th Australian Division that served in the Pacific, and during the fall of Singapore, he escaped, leaving his men to become prisoners of the Imperial Japanese Army. His actions were supported by the majority of those soldiers, but ranks higher up, both in Australia and England, condemned him. There was a military, even a royal commission, held on the question of whether he had indeed deserted. It was a huge drama, with current implications. Desertion, I might add, was pretty widespread at the time, but certainly not at that level. This year we marked the 75th anniversary of the fall of Singapore, and August marks the 55th anniversary of his death. This story still divides and intrigues people, and it's been recently investigated by journalist and broadcaster Roger Maynard, whose book is Hero or Deserter, Gordon Bennett and the Tragic Division Defeat of the 8th Division. Welcome, Roger, now to Saturday Extra.
Good morning, Geraldine.
Look, this is one of the great controversies, isn't it, Roger, in Australian military history, up there with Harry Breaker Morant. Will it ever be laid to rest truly? Is that what intrigued you about it?
Yeah, even 75 years later, I think it's still a very sensitive issue, the escape of Gordon Bennett. You know, why he went, was he justified in going, and, you know, should he have been prosecuted for desertion? So, and even, you know, during the course of the research of this book, you know, I sensed, to a certain extent, I was treading on eggshells when I talked to people about it. And as I say, even 75 years later, it's still a sensitive issue.
Yes, there's a military definition of a deserter, and this is where some of the controversy enters the picture because of sort of matters of technical timing, though I presume that there are lots of people who just say outright it was his duty to stay with his men until the very end, as I think the American General Jonathan Wainwright did. So what is the definition? How does it fit into the timing of Bennett's escape?
Okay, well, now, officially, a man is allowed, an officer or a soldier is allowed to escape when he becomes a POW. Now, Bennett always argued that he escaped after the surrender at the fall of Singapore at 8:30 p.m. on February 15th, 1942. He escaped about an hour and a half, 2 hours later. And he argued that he was legally entitled to escape at that particular time because he was effectively a POW, even though he wasn't behind barbed wire. And that was always his case, that you know, he had the right to do so. Others, of course, argue differently. The military and the Royal Commission that was held in 1945, they argued that Bennett didn't really become a POW until, you know, a day or two later when all the rest of the troops were behind barbed wire in Changi. So, you know, it's a very, very debatable point, this. You know, was he legally entitled to go or not?
Yeah, because if you're a POW, this is what I learned from reading your book, you are entitled under international law to use any means at your disposal to escape. That is completely your right.
Oh, that's right. Exactly right. Yeah. But the question that was raised during the Royal Commission, and the Royal Commission went on for about a fortnight in December 1945, the minutiae of military law is quite difficult to interpret, and people have very, very different views on, you know, whether the surrender constituted a capitulation, for example. Capitulation is not the same as a surrender. You know, the lawyers went on for 14 days or more, trying to argue whether or not Bennett was actually a POW at that stage. And in the end, Justice Ligot Wood, the commissioner, found against Bennett and argued or ruled that he was not entitled to go.
But that he'd been sincere in his belief that he was acting in the best interests of his country.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, let me just quote Justice Ligot Wood's report. He said, I think that he acted from a sense of high patriotism and according to what he conceived to be his duty to his country. The conviction hardened in his mind that it would be of great advantage to Australia if he himself could get back and acquaint the authorities with what he had learned. He nevertheless adhered to his primary duty as commander of the forces and was determined that he would faithfully carry out that duty until the end of the campaign. So he stayed in Singapore until the end of the campaign, until the actual surrender. And he always argued that he, at that point, he was no longer under the jurisdiction or authority of General Percival, who, of course, was the general officer commanding for the Allies in Singapore.
Well, that's the other marvellous part of this, is that Percival never, I think, forgave him. He thought he was wrong, all told. But then there was a question of whether he really was under the command or under the full authority of the British general officer commanding, or whether he was his own boss as the head of Australia's 8th Division. And you say there would be no secret of him planning his escape. He talked to senior officers about it because he felt he'd learned so much, despite the British, of how the Japanese would attack, and that this could be put to good use. I mean, do you find it a believable argument?
Yeah, well, certainly that was always his belief, that he picked up so much information about how the Japanese had been so successful in their campaign on the Malay Peninsula. But he felt that he was one of the few people who actually understood their tactics, and that these could be of enormous use back in Australia should the Japanese decide to attack Australia. And so he felt that he had to go back to brief the military authorities in Australia and the government accordingly and tell them exactly what went on. And in fact, he did write a couple of very thick manuals, training manuals, for distribution to the troops and officers, outlining in great detail the way the Japanese had operated. And these were apparently put to use in New Guinea, for example, during the course of the war. So he did have a case for doing that, and he certainly followed that through.
The 8th Division certainly, Roger, lost a huge number of soldiers in the Malay-Singapore campaign. 73% of deaths were members of the 8th Division, which was only 13% of the Allied forces. And you say the battles and the bravery they displayed has been overshadowed by the Bennett story. Why was the rate of injury and fatality so high? Did they take extra chances because they had this incredibly gung-ho leader in Bennett?
Well, that may have been partly the reason, but I think the basic reason is that they actually engaged in two very, very serious battles, Gemas and Muir. And those battles saw hand-to-hand fighting between the Japanese and the Australians. And during these two battles, the Australians really showed their mettle. You know, they performed valiantly and courageously, and many of them died in the process. And of course, they were urged on by Bennett, whose ethos was always attack, attack, attack. Whereas he argued that the British were more of the mind retreat, retreat, retreat. And I suppose his philosophy encouraged the men to go further than perhaps they should have done in some respects. And as a result of that, quite a few of them were injured and killed.
Look, we couldn't make this discussion work if we did not mention the extraordinary characters involved and the lifelong rivalry between Bennett and General Thomas Blamey. And I wonder how you see that, because you say that rivalry had an impact on the course of Australia's role in World War II. Tell us why.
Well, I mean, basically, this rivalry began way back in the First World War, and even before the First World War. Blamey and Bennett were always intense rivals, and there was a great deal of enmity between them. It began when Blamey accused Bennett of throwing him into a horse's trough during a training exercise. Bennett always denied this. And subsequently, during the First World War, both men were fighting in France, and Bennett was hoping to get married to his wife, Bess, in London, and asked for 14 days' leave. And Blamey, who was superior to Bennett, decided that he could only go for a few days. And this infuriated Bennett. And that sort of sparked a lifelong rivalry between the two men. And subsequently, in the Second World War, this rivalry continued. And both men were keen to get the job as the head of the army. It was Blamey who eventually got that job, much to Bennett's annoyance. And so really it influenced their tactics during the war. It influenced their decision making, and if Blamey could get one over on Bennett, he would do so, and vice versa. And that's how it sort of impacted on the course of the war.
Look, Just moving on to the implications for Australian military behaviour, when he died at the age of 75 from a massive heart attack, there were estimates of 15,000 people lining the streets with 5,000 crammed into the cathedral for his funeral. And even at that funeral, the Anglican chaplain general said that the 49 years of his military career gave to the world one of its most colourful yet controversial military figures. Have you sensed a long-tail legacy in the Australian military about this question of honourable behaviour, particularly of a commanding officer, where your duty lies?
Yeah, I mean, that is very much the case. You know, there is no greater offence than for a leader of men, a senior officer, to desert his men. And you know, that is looked down on by military and has been for many, many decades. And certainly, even today, you know, the military takes that same view. I did a straw poll of retired and present military leaders in Australia, and the overwhelming view was that Bennett should not have escaped. In fact, I spoke to the leader of the Duntroon Training Academy over in Canberra, and she made it very, very clear that if she was in the same position herself today, then there was no way that she would have escaped, and she would have you know, stayed on to defend her men, because you know, that was the thing you had to do. You didn't turn your back on your men. You had to stand by them and help them in every possible way.
And interestingly, Charles Moses, who was a very honourable general manager of the ABC, he escaped with Bennett, but went back, I think, to fight in Ambon. So there were sort of very big names who were involved in this story, weren't there?
Yeah, there were. Charles Moses joined Bennett and one other man on the sampan out of Singapore Harbour. Their escape was a major sort of maritime adventure in itself. You know, they took several days to reach Sumatra. When they got to Sumatra, they found it difficult to make contact with the Dutch and to make contact with Wavell, the supreme commander of the Allied forces. They sort of caught taxis, they hitched rides with people, they managed to get on a motor launcher to sail up a river. And it took a lot of running around and a lot of risk to avoid the Japanese in their pursuit of getting back to Australia. Eventually they got as far as Java, and at that point, Charles Moses was knocked down by a taxi, and so he didn't complete the journey. He arrived some months later. But Bennett managed to get away. He got to Batavia, and amazingly enough, there was a Qantas plane on the runway, and he discovered that he couldn't get a ticket for this Qantas plane because it was on charter to somebody else. So in actual fact, he got there the night before the plane was due to leave and stowed away and hid himself on board.
Oh no.
And eventually got back to Australia to Broome, later on that day. And as a result of that, he thought, you know, he'd done a good job. He thought that he'd be congratulated for getting back to Australia. But when he got back to Sydney's Mascot Airport, although there were lots of press and photographers and reporters there and a lot of people to congratulate him, the army made it quite clear that they didn't really want to talk. They didn't want him to talk about his escape. And the day after that, he was sent down to Melbourne to be reprimanded accordingly by a Sturdee. And then his career virtually, you know, failed after that.
Well, what an amazing story. Roger Maynard, thank you very much indeed for telling us all about it.
Thank you very much, Geraldine. Good to talk to you.
And Roger Maynard's Hero or Deserter is published by Penguin Random House. That was just a snapshot. What a great film it would make too.